Welcome to A Place to Call Home. I'm your host, Ed O. Bridgman, electrical engineer, developer, and founder of EOB Consulting. Today, I'm exploring how innovative RV destinations are redefining modern living. You're watching Now Media Television. Hello and welcome to A Place to Call Home. I'm your host, Ed O. Bridgman. We're coming to you today live from 7 miles southwest of Shamrock, Texas. I'm here today with Dixon Connor. Thank you and welcome. Thank you for letting me interview you.
Yes, sir. Glad you're here, Ed.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Connor. So, how did we get here? How long have you lived in this area?
I've lived in this area for 33 years.
In other words, all your life.
My whole life. I've lived since I was a month old or 2 months old. I've lived here my whole life.
Okay, and we're closer to Amarillo. We're about 80 some miles from Amarillo, and we're about 120 some miles from Oklahoma City off of Highway I-40,
Interstate 40.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so this is a very common road for people to travel that are going from coast to coast along I-40, right across the top of Texas, through Oklahoma, all the way from one coast to the other. So you've lived here all your life, but I think your grandfather worked this property?
Yes, yeah, for about the last 15 years.
Your grandfather worked it, but he didn't own it.
No, we leased it from three sisters. I think my grandpa did it for 10 years, and then I've taken over it since 2017. And the opportunity came up to buy it, and my grandfather was going to buy it, and, you know, he was getting close to retiring, and he thought, you know, what better way to keep it in the family than to one of his grandsons, so... You know, he helped me acquire the land and purchase it and make the down payment. And, you know, 7-8 years later, here we are. And I farm this land. I grow cotton on it. And a big chunk of it's in CRP. But, yep.
So explain for our people that are watching what CRP means.
So that's a government program that the government pays farmers like a certain area, a certain portion of acres in every county. They paid them, you know, to put it in grass and keep people from farming it and getting the topsoil blowing, you know, during the Dust Bowl when all that was going on. So it's a conservation program to help, you know, keep the land from blowing all over the place, blowing on your neighbor pretty much.
Well, doesn't it also allow the land to rest and to rejuvenate, allow the natural sage and natural grasses to grow for several years and re-herbalize the land? I don't know. I think I made that word up. To re-nutriate the land with natural growth?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a lot of truth to that. You know, in other states, there probably is where they actually have pretty really good farmland. They probably rotate, you know, places in and out of CRP fairly regularly. Around here, you know, it's not so much like that. There's a lot of farm ground around here, and there's a lot of grass as well. So most people put something in CRP, and it's going to be in CRP for the long term, unless, you know, something arises, kind of like while you're here.
I appreciate that. Yeah. So you specifically behind us back here, this darker brown is cotton.
Yes, sir.
Has that already been planted?
No, it has not. It will probably be planted in the next 2 weeks.
Okay. But the ground has been worked.
Yes.
It's ready to be planted.
Yes.
Okay. And you have cotton every year.
Yes, sir. You know, just right now in agriculture, there's really not a whole lot of other things that, you know, can cash flow. You know, you could do milo or some sort of sorghum, but there's really not a good market for that around here. So the majority of people do cotton and peanuts is really only on irrigated acres, and I don't have any irrigation here. We've done cotton for the last 10 years, 15 years.
And how many acres do you have?
There's 170 acres here of farm ground that I farm, and altogether I've got a half section, about 330 acres, including the CRP.
Okay. Now, and this is all fascinating to me. I actually grew up on a farm myself, but this particular property beside us, even though it has not been broken out and it is not farmland, this is also not CRP land.
Yes, sir.
So explain to us that you're not farming it, but you're also not getting paid by the government to not farm it.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, there can be some ground that the grass is so terrible or that the soil can't, you know, grow grass that, you know, they won't even put it in a CRP program. It's so
it's
sorry.
It's not even worth setting
right,
aside.
Right, and this was covered up in sage, and so if it's got a ton of sage on it like that, they really don't want it in CRP. You know, they'd rather it be in blue stem grass or buffalo grass or some kind of native grass. So that's why this 30 to 40 acre section here is not in CRP. And it's just, there's a lot of rocks, and cotton farmers and rocks really don't get along. So, yeah, that's why we don't try to break it out and farm it.
So this 30 acres approximately is not making you any money right now.
That's correct, yes.
You bought it, but it's not really cash flowing.
No, I'm paying taxes on it, and it's not really bringing in any money.
Okay. And so what you were talking about doing is turning this into a money-making asset, something that we can return an investment on. So it's got a little rise to it. It's got these mesquite trees back here. But what are you thinking about doing with it?
So I'm thinking, you know, kind of a hunting theme. I'm a big hunter myself. I like to shoot guns. I like to reload ammo. I like to primarily hunt at night, you know, for coyotes and pigs. And so I'd kind of like to incorporate that into an RV themed destination, you know. And so I saw you on a podcast and, you know, kind of put all this together and would like to have a shooting range, you know, and just a place for people to stay. And, you know, if they don't hunt here on my place, you know, there's all kinds of leases around here, so they could be close to their hunting leases.
So what type of wild game would we expect to find out here?
I mean, anything, turkeys, deer, wild pigs, quail, dove, coyotes. That's pretty much the majority of them right there.
So I can say that yesterday when we were setting up for this shot, we went a mile back towards the highway, and next to the road was this big turkey, big turkey in the ditch. And so I spun the car around and turned around, and before I got back to the turkey, a roadrunner ran in front of us. And then I took the camera and I attempted to video this turkey. I don't know if I got any of it, but I was never more than 10 feet from him. He was running around this bush and keeping this bush between us. And there's wild animals just everywhere out here. How about rattlesnakes?
I was about to say, rattlesnakes also. Me and my wife went and ate last night, and when we were coming through here about a mile up the road, there was a 3 or 4 foot rattlesnake laying in the middle of the road.
Alive?
Alive, yeah. And I did not hit it because I wanted to come back and catch it, but I did not end up doing that, but I should have. But yeah, I catch rattlesnakes also. You know, I don't just pick them up with my bare hands.
Catches them live.
Yeah. There is a market for that.
And sells them.
Yeah.
He sells them. Okay. So he's not just crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Not just crazy. He might be crazy also. All right. So you mentioned your wife. So how long have you been married?
Since 2022. So going to be 4 years last March. Yeah.
Good for you. And do you have any children?
Yeah. One 14-month-old and another one on the way in August.
Wow. Exciting things are happening at your place.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that's great. And then you have brothers?
One older brother. Yeah. He farms also. We farm together. And
nearby.
Yeah. Yeah. He farms the place just east of this one, actually.
Okay.
But yeah, one older brother. And then my dad, he farms also. And my grandpa did, you know, but he's kind of stepped aside and letting us farm his ground and stuff. So, yep.
Do you guys share equipment?
Yeah, we do. We own a cotton stripper together, my brother and I do, and we trade stuff out, you know, plows for tractors and stuff like that on the farm. So it's hard to keep up with, but we do our best. We do.
You must have a good relationship.
We do.
Well, good. All right. So you bought this property in 2017, and you're looking to create a way to have this property pay for itself, and we're considering an RV destination. So how many miles are we from I-40?
I think five and a half miles.
Straight north. Straight north is I-40, mm-hmm. That runs east and west from Atlantic to the Pacific. And this is Blacktop Road. And we just spoke with some people who were coming out of this, looks like a pasture, but they had rented a place over there for the night to stay in their RV.
Mm-hmm.
Right across the street.
Yep, the Lone Mound Ranch. That's the Lone Mound Ranch.
Okay, and this is just a big open area for people to... So you already have a proven concept.
Yes.
That people are paying to stay here, even overnight guests, more or less long-term guests. And those people were not interested in hunting. So... they were interested in having a quiet away from the city, away from the lights, beautiful scenery, beautiful night sky. That's what they were looking for. So we know that this area is going to attract more RVs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's awesome. Okay, well, we're going to continue talking to Dixon Connor here outside of Shamrock on his property in the next segment. So go get some popcorn going and do what you need to do, and look forward to coming back to our next segment, where we're going to dig in deeper to exactly what it is that Dixon wants to do. We'll be right back with more insight into designing communities that combine freedom, profitability, and purpose. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Ed O. Bridgman, and this is A Place to Call Home on Now Media Television. Let's continue this conversation. And welcome back to segment two of A Place to Call Home with Ed Bridgman as your host. I'm here today with Dixon Connor on his property that he is planning to build an RV destination. So welcome back. Thank you for, we've moved locations now to another portion of his property. How many acres did you say you had?
330.
330 acres, and how many are you considering using with an RV destination?
150, 175.
If you need to.
Yes, sir.
Not all at once, right. But we can build it in phases. That'd right. be great. Okay, so how did you come up with this idea?
Well, I actually got to give credit to my brother, so, you know.
Shout out. What's your brother's name?
Tucker.
Tucker.
Yep, shout out to Tucker. So... he called me when I was on the tractor one day. He told me, hey, I got a million dollar idea for you. And he's like, you need to build an RV park on your place up there, which is south of I-40. And I'm like, why? And he's like, well, have you heard about all these AI centers coming into town? And I'm like, no. And there's just rumors of them everywhere around here. And so supposedly, you know, they're building one 5 to 7 miles away from here. So
straight up on I-40, yep. Which is 5.5 miles north of here, is the intersection of 275?
This is FM 1547 and I-40, Interstate 40.
Interstate 40 and FM
1547.
Someone purchased 1,700 acres, yep, to build a data center, an AI data center.
Right.
And those workers will be working 13 days on, one day off for the next 11 years. And those workers, the vast majority of them own RVs. So if you're anywhere within a 20-mile radius of where they're building a Walmart Supercenter, an Amazon distribution center, an AI data center, you cannot build your RV destination fast enough. So that's what gave you the idea.
Right. Yep. And I've always been kind of an entrepreneur mindset. I've just never done anything. You know, I've always wanted to do a car wash. I've always wanted to, you know, have a laundromat. And And then my brother told me that, and I just got on YouTube one night and started looking up how to start your own RV park. And we've got a skid steer, stuff like that. You know, I've got a six-way blade. I know how to do some stuff. And my brother was just wanting me to come in here and make some spots to make an RV park and, you know, build it from scratch, you know, pretty much myself. And out here, we are a little DIYers, you know. We can do some stuff, though. But I like to do things the right way. And so I got going down a YouTube hole, and, you know, and I ended up coming across you on someone's podcast. And
you being EOB Consulting.
Yes, sir.
So you saw me on a podcast.
Yes, sir.
And I was talking about how to go from raw land, as we have here, to a finished product of where you can rent RVs. And so you gave me a call.
Yeah, I got on your Zoom calendar, made an appointment, called you from the tractor when I was strip tilling.
While he was on the tractor.
Terrible phone service, you know, so I had to stop and called him and, you know, got him out here now. And so, yeah. Yeah.
Him being Edo Bridgman.
Yeah.
All right. So we're out here now. We're looking around, and it feels like we're kind of out between Amarillo and Oklahoma City, because that's where we are. But when you factor in the fact that there is a data center going in 5 miles up the road, all of a sudden you realize this area is getting ready to explode with workers, thousands of workers who are going to require a place to live while they are developing that data center. So congratulations on being forward thinking enough to recognize the potential that you can turn this property into a living center for these people.
Right.
That is fantastic. So in America today, we have already a low-income housing shortage. We've talked about that for years. But we also have a shortage of people who are willing to work. So it's difficult to hire someone who represents your company the way you want to be represented at a price you can afford. So it's important that we create this, we develop this property in such a way that we're less dependent upon workers. And so that's one of the things that you were attracted to in my podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to be able to have these people come in, stay, do their laundry, have public bathrooms, of course, but you really don't need a lot of amenities
right.
this time. Okay. So these people work 13 days on, one day off. They work 12-hour days, and they just work. Okay. So, and they make a lot of money. So they're welders, pipe fitters, contractors, subcontractors, concrete guys, electricians, plumbers. They all are living in RVs, and they're looking for a place like this year round. You're going to be open year round.
Mm-hmm.
What's the coldest it gets around here on a really bad winter?
I would say about 10 degrees, probably 10 degrees or so.
As the coldest it's going to get at night.
Yeah. I've seen it get down to 0 degrees, but that's with a wind chill, you know, with a 20, 30 mile per hour wind. So, and we don't get that very often, but yeah, it does get below freezing here, but not anything crazy really.
And how many months of winter do you have?
I mean, that can vary, you know, and everyone will tell you that here in the Texas Panhandle, but I mean, it normally starts about January and it can last till April, but it could also be 90 degrees. There could be a span in there where it's 90 degrees for a week. So normally, you know, I would say from late January to really the middle of March or so, maybe the beginning of March, but okay. You might get a snowstorm in April. You never know.
Okay. Actually, we were in Amarillo. When was that? 2 years ago or so, I was in Amarillo and we got a big snowstorm down in Mobile, Alabama. First one in 20 years. But how about your summers? How hot can it get?
You know, 110, 105 is fairly common. In 2011, I think we had like 40 days in a row over 100, and it didn't rain for a year. But last year was a very mild summer. You know, we had a few 100-degree days, but most of them were in the 90s. So, you know, it can get pretty hot here, 105, 110.
Okay. So, and then last night we had a 1-inch rain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did.
With some 20-mile-an-hour winds.
yeah. Really, I think probably it was gusting 35, 40 maybe, but it's pretty common for the wind just to below 20 to 25 around here, gust over 30.
And that's the reason why we have so many windmill farms.
Yep, there's a lot of wind turbines around here. I actually went to college for that.
To build wind turbines?
To work on wind turbines, yeah.
You went to college to be able to work on wind turbines. What do you, building, if you don't build, what, greasing them?
Technician, yeah, and we cleaned them and maintained them. But yeah, I was actually wanting to be a technician, you know, and work on them and troubleshoot them. But I got hired on out of college. I went to a technical college in Sweetwater, Texas. TSTC is what it's called. And I got hired on and worked for 3 months. And then that company went belly up, you know. So I got to work for them, make some money while I was still finishing up college. And then actually went to the oil field after that and worked in the oil field for 8 years. And I was working 1 week on, 1 week off. And I was farming on my week off. And so, yeah, long story short, yeah, there's a lot of wind turbines around here.
Wow, yeah. Wow. So your background is gone to college, working on wind turbines, working in the oil field, and farming pretty much all your life one way or another.
Yep. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
But now you've settled on farming.
Yep. Yeah, I enjoy it. My son loves tractors. He's one, you know.
He's 1 year old.
Yeah, but I can't take him in the tractor with me or he'll... You know, we have guidance, GPS on our tractors, and he'll grab the steering wheel and pull you off the road. So if you're trying to do anything important, you can't have Cannon in there. He'll wreak havoc.
All right. So let's have we did a shout out to your brother, Tucker.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Let's do a shout out while we're at it so that in a couple of years from now, Cannon can see this and say, hey, my daddy's talking about me.
All right.
So hi, Cannon.
Yeah.
Wave to Cannon.
Shout out, Cannon.
Shout out to Cannon. Okay. And we have a biscuit in the oven.
Yeah, we do.
Have we got names for the biscuit yet?
Callaway. Yeah, it's a girl, and my wife wanted Callaway. Callaway Kate.
Callaway Kate. You're not even born yet. We're already waving to you. Isn't that cool? Yeah. All right. So, how about your wife, your lovely wife? What's her name?
Bridget. Shout out Bridget. Yeah.
Shout out Bridget.
She's a great mom.
Great mom.
Great mom.
Ah, she already has 1 year experience.
Yeah, she does. She's still figuring it out, but she's great. She's 3 hours from her mother, you know, so that's kind of hard not having your mom right there next to you. So she's doing good being out here in the middle of nowhere. She does good.
Awesome. And how did you meet?
We met at a dirt track race, actually. She was friends with some guys that I went to school with, and I was staying the night with him when I was down there doing some spine decompression. I had a bulging disc, and he was like, hey, you want to go to the dirt track races? And so we went, and Bridget was there, and we met there, and the rest is history. We were married, I think, 6 months later.
Wow.
Yeah.
Love it.
Didn't waste any time. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. And you've been married like 4 years.
4 years, yeah.
Awesome. Well, good for you. Man, and then she moved here to be with you.
Yep. She lets me know that a lot.
So. Yeah. The sacrifices we make. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, back to the party at hand. We're standing here in a cottonwood grove. Some of these cottonwoods have got to be hundreds of years old. This massive here in front of us is just amazing. Oh, what stories they could tell, if they could tell, about the Indians and the battles and the storms that they have weathered. Just absolutely gorgeous. This is a gorgeous area. We've got a little low spot here. We haven't had a lot of rain in the last half a dozen years, so this low spot is now dry. But thinking about putting in a pond and maybe filling it with a well. All right. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this segment of A Place to Call Home. I'm your host, Ed O. Bridgman, and I know I've enjoyed getting to know my client, Dixon Connor, and his family a little bit better. We are excited about this project. Is it okay if we come back after you've broken ground and make some more episodes?
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's plan on it. I hope you're here. We'll be right back with more insight into designing communities that combine freedom, profitability, and purpose. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Ed O. Bridgman, and this is A Place to Call Home on Now Media Television. Let's continue this conversation. Hello, and welcome to another segment of A Place to Call Home with your host, Ed O. Bridgman, here from Shawnee, Oklahoma, with Kent Breezy.
Correct.
All right, Kent, welcome. Thank you for letting me interview you.
Thank you for being here.
Well, it's my pleasure. It's absolutely my pleasure. And this is actually my second time here. You've actually increased the number of RVs that are here since I was here last.
We have.
Yeah, you've actually already started making some changes. So, but my guests are very excited to hear about your background. What'd you do before this RV destination?
Telecommunications, construction, and some real estate. Did a lot in single family housing and was looking for a bigger opportunity, which is what led to this.
Okay, so you were looking for a bigger opportunity, preferably bigger returns on investment.
Yeah.
Awesome. So in real estate, you were buying and selling houses?
Primarily buying.
Primarily buying and holding, maybe flipping some houses or something?
Very rarely, yeah.
Mostly buying and holding.
Portfolio. Yeah.
A portfolio. Okay. So now you want to add to your portfolio an RV destination. Or in this case, maybe two RV destinations.
That's right.
So was there any wahoo moment that said, I want to get in the RV industry? Was there anything that made you all of a sudden wake up one morning and say, this is where I want to take my portfolio?
You know, in everything I've done in business, there's really four things that I think any good business person is looking for.
Well, we are excited to hear. What are the four things that this successful business person thinks is important?
You're looking for something that you can understand. You're looking for something that has a durable competitive advantage. You're looking for something that has great people. And you're looking for a price that makes sense. And I found all of those in this opportunity. And The person who's off camera here represents somebody who I think you can trust with not only this site, but multiple sites around this part of the United States.
Well, awesome. How about the person on camera?
Person on camera has been hugely helpful to me.
That's, you know, I don't want to only talk about me, but how do you think about me?
Right. Now, Ed and I were talking, how do we get connected? And I have a friend who helps me find real estate. And I told him, I said, find me the best person in the United States who knows this niche. And that's how we got connected. So glad to be connected with you.
I'm glad to be connected with you. And I'm honored to think that there's somebody out there that thinks I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, they were right.
Awesome. Okay. So you have a portfolio, you're growing your portfolio, you're diversifying your portfolio. You decide to go into the RV industry. And you locate a couple of people that you can trust. Mm-hmm. And then how did you find this property?
It was a cold call. It was reaching out. The person I'd mentioned before, his name is Nick. Nick was looking for different pieces of real estate we could invest in, things that had a return on investment, also had cash flow. And he asked me, would you be interested in something like an RV park? And I said, stick close to the highways and see what we can do. And found this opportunity. And it was one that fit another one of the goals that I have is, what do we do that benefits other people? We want to serve other people. It's the reason we're in business. We believe that the purpose of business is to create more life. And so I came out here and had a love for the people instantly and tried to figure out, okay, well, if my sister or my brother or I lived out here, what would I want someone to do for me? And so making sure that you've got good management that's going to think about the human life that gets lived here, you know, a place to call home. How do we make sure that that's the kind of thing that happens that I would be proud if my own family lived here? Something where it could be a destination, somewhere it could be a vacation, and maybe a blend of both.
Awesome. Well, that is such a beautiful story. I appreciate you sharing that with us. So how many acres do you have here?
About 150 acres.
150 acres. And there, before you bought it, it had an equestrian theme. Name is the
Rolling Stones Stables and RV Park in Shawnee, Oklahoma.
Rolling Stones Stables and RV Park. And so you stable horses here.
Yes.
So people can come here and they can bring their horses and you can provide them with a nice, clean, well-kept stable. And they can even have riding arenas and they can have pastures that their horses can eat, natural grass.
Right. And we don't do horse boarding. We do horse motel, which means we're providing a place for them to stay.
Short term. Okay. So we are deep into rodeo season.
Right.
And next week, you've got a rodeo here in Shawnee. So you're going to be full.
Hopefully so.
You already have reservations. I was talking to Rich. You already have reservations. You're going to be full next week. And then a week off, and then there's another rodeo, and you're going to be full again. And 2 weeks off, and then another rodeo, and you're going to be full again. So people are coming in and out of here with horses. So part of the draw, how many sites are here?
42.
42 sites. So part of that draw of the people who are coming and going is because of the location next to the horse area.
Right. Hopefully we'll capture a lot of that market.
Awesome. And then, so approximately 50% of the people are longer term stays.
Right.
And 50% of the people are in and out with their horses and traveling up and down I-40. Okay, that's great. Okay, so you bought 150 acres, you bought 42 sites that were already developed, already people living here. Half of them are long-term, half of them are coming in and out. What surprises have you discovered?
Nothing but surprises. We found lots of opportunities for improvement. We found lots of opportunities to change very simple things. And really today we're beginning the week of our construction, preparing to purchase a lot of the equipment that will enable a lot of what's going to be constructed. And so if I started the list, it would be pretty lengthy. So I can start by saying one of our jokes has been surprise, which is our tagline for our operation here. So we found a lot of things that needed to be improved, needed to be remediated. Extensive.
What about the low-hanging fruit? What's the easiest, fastest, highest return on investment to take care of? What's the first things you're going to take care of? The first three things you're going to take care of?
We've owned this for just over 6 months. And really, the first part was we purchased a going operation and decided, let's go ahead and keep what's there and improve on it incrementally.
So you learn about the current operation. You don't go in and throw out everything and start from scratch right off the bat.
Correct.
Okay.
The opportunity to improve the customer journey was huge. So before we were here, we had a road that was misnamed, something that wouldn't come up on Google. You could be in town, Google RV parks, and it wouldn't show up. And our customer journey to having a site here involved two different phone calls, a wrong address, a correction. And then they had to go on the website, which they didn't have access to find the price that was listed on there was also inaccurate, and things that were supposedly free actually came at a cost. And, I got to give the people who had run this credit. They started with a hobby farm that was a horse operation and found lots of people that kept asking them, can we bring somebody out here? Can we have some of our workers come and stay? And boom, they wake up and they've got 42 sites after running a hobby farm. And they did a successful job building it to this point. And the reason that I wanted to engage with you, Ed, is I was trying to figure out how do we do something where in everything that we do, we're known as people who do the best, bring excellence into anything to try to improve the operation of people's lives. So we found kind of a limitless number of opportunities to improve. And I think we're going to continue to find that. But a lot of that has been solved by having the right team.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I am extremely proud and humbled to be part of your team. Thank you very much for all your kind words. So we have 150 acres. It kind of rises in the center and drops on both sides. This side is developed. That side is still open field.
Correct.
With a rise in the center that the plan, as I understand, is to put your riding arenas in the middle, kind of separating that half of the property from this half of the property. And then we're going to develop, say, 1/4 of this half first and move people over there to that fourth while we develop a fourth over here on the other side, mm-hmm. and then start growing from there. But eventually have a destination that caters to the worker or maybe the people who can't afford the best place in the world on this half and cater that side on the other side of the horse arenas to people who want a higher end place.
Right. Thinking more on the south end, we have the shape of a mile long rectangle. On the south end, we have what is kind of hilariously named a private lake. It's really a big pond, but we have a private lake based on the state law. And on this end, it's going to be thought of more as a community and a neighborhood.
Okay.
In the north end, it'll largely be a destination. And you might have an equestrian trail that connects the two, making that destination connect down into our private lake. And so there's going to be a lot of thoughtfulness that goes into that. Appreciate your design team helping us with those components. But yeah, we're getting ready to start with what we're calling phase 1A here to really improve this and make sure our cash flow is right so that we can utilize that cash flow over time to build out these other phases. Adebek?
Well, you're really taking advantage of the fact that there are five different RV destination types, and you're going to end up with at least a minimum of two different destinations on the same 150-acre plot of land. One is more of a resort, higher end on that end, and one is more of a community
right.
on this end, catering to people who don't want to pay as much
correct.
As the people on that end. Awesome. Separated by two different horse arenas. We got stables over here already. You're set up to just go flying here any minute now.
Yeah, I think so. Anybody, if you're coaching a lot of people thinking about their business, I would always start to think, what does my operation look like today? And what does incremental CapEx, capital expenditure, going to look like to build this out? I mean, what's it going to take? Just simply put, my dad used to joke with me. He'd say, until you can explain something to your mom, don't try with anybody else. And I have a tremendous mom. She's not a business person. She'd say, Mom, we're going to start with this many sites. We're going to plan on expending what we need to get to 50 more sites. Our cash flow would look like this at that point. And then month over month, here's the kind of improvements that we hope to make, both in people, systems, and then expansion of where we're offering.
Awesome. Well, obviously, Kent has thought this through. He's assembled a team that's going to help him be successful. I hope you'll stick around for our next segment. Go get some popcorn and hurry back, because we're going to pick this up where we left off. We'll be right back with more insight into designing communities that combine freedom, profitability, and purpose. Stay tuned. And we're back. I'm Ed O. Bridgman, and this is A Place to Call Home on Now Media Television. Let's continue this conversation. And welcome back to another segment of A Place to Call Home with your host, Ed O. Bridgman. I'm here today with Kent Breezy at the Rolling
Stone Stable
and RV Park in Shawnee, Oklahoma. And now we've moved over to what we're going to call the lower portion of 2B. So tell us more about your reasoning, your methodology, your inspiration.
Inspiration. That's a deep one. I find the right people, and finding the right spot for the right people is a true joy. And, you know, we were talking about this off camera. A couple of things I really have been a huge help to me. There's a book I read called Sacred Pace. It's about a guy that runs a very large oil and gas operation in Houston. He said sacred pace for him after he'd had a burnout in life equaled four things that he's looking for. You hear me say four a lot, because I can remember four.
I
can't go beyond. But the four were, in all things that matter, consult your friend Jesus, get okay. the facts, look for circumstances, and get neutral.
Start from the beginning and say it one more time for the people that want to write it down.
Absolutely. In all things that matter, consult your friend Jesus, get the facts for what you're looking at, look for circumstances, and get neutral. So the story about this RV park for us was Nick, who works with me that finds these properties, we decided we'd approach the RV market. He made a single cold call and found a family that said, how did you know we were trying to sell?
Wow.
So the circumstances were really profound. It was right off the highway, and but I didn't know much about what it takes to operate it, but I figured we can learn that, something we can look as well. What does it take? So that's the getting the facts portion.
Okay.
And then getting neutral is really a process of, okay, is this the way we're going to do it? Is this the time we're going to do it? Are these terms going to work for us? Are they going to work for the other party? And then Alfred, who's off camera, who's responsible here and is somebody that I trust. Alfred and I were at a men's retreat, and he was telling me about a transition in his life where he and his wife are looking at what's next, and they were interested in outdoor type environments and things with people, and began talking about that. Really interesting. I think that was in October. I closed on this middle of December, and they put out the fleece, so to speak, about is this where they're supposed to move? Because you had previously lived 3 hours away. And so for me, it's hard to own an operation, not have the leader that you want, and they're waiting on the validation for this is the direction that they're going. And so being patient, I've got a great team that is not here today, that were thinking about it, but they're not on site, they're not experts in this field, and none of them have the technical background that Alfred's got. And so it's been an amazing thing to see. Alfred began almost as a consultant role for a period of time, off-site, coming here sometimes. And man, we all had to wait for a period of time until that became abundantly clear that this is the direction that they were going. And so for me, that was the neutral part. I want to work with Alfred and Michelle because I believe in them. I believe in their thought process. I believe in their judgment. But I'm not the one to call the shot. I can make the offer. I can think what I want to think. But ultimately, I'm trying to figure out, is this the right fit? And when you have people who are all aligned in an agreement on the operation and they have the same heart, they have different skill sets, it's beautiful. Some people tell me in partnerships or in arrangements, you got to have different, you have to have different attitudes. I think that's completely wrong.
Okay.
I think you want to have people who have the exact same attitude, different skill sets and gifts.
Okay.
If you have people who have different attitudes, you got somebody who's super pessimistic. I'm talking about super. I'm fine being pessimistic. But if you have somebody who is a hardcore pessimist and somebody who's a hardcore optimist, it's going to be really hard to have those people be a functional team.
I understand.
If instead you have people who have the same attitude of, let's find a way to make this work. You've got this skill set. I've got this one. I'm going to respect your gifts. You respect mine. Let's cooperate on making this successful.
And when we identify talents that we don't have between the two of us, let's go find that missing link and bring that into the team.
Right. Yeah, you can do that by finding the right people.
There you go. All right. For example, I've never done my own taxes. I refuse. I will never do my own taxes.
You're wealthier because of that.
I'm not going to learn the tax code that changes every year. Yeah. I'm not going to pull all my hair out trying to do that. I'm going to have a CPA that I trust, and I'm going to give him the facts and the truth and say, go take care of that for me.
Right.
So
yeah, ultimately, I don't want to run this like it's a small business. We want to run this. I'm hiring the best people to run an operation that could be the best. We want to operate it with teams of people. Eventually, Alfred and Michelle are going to have people who are here to support as assistants. How do we make sure they're doing the stuff that they're absolutely excellent at and making sure that a lot of the administration and day-to-day things, we can take it off their plate? That's a part of success. It's a part of building a team that works well together is you got to be developing people. And that's one of the things that both Alfred and Michelle are great at.
So a couple of your other businesses, you really enjoy helping people be more successful in what they're doing. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, you thinking about all the financial services stuff we talked about?
Yeah.
There's a book I would recommend to anybody who's interested in this. It's called Becoming Your Own Banker. Hugely beneficial. It's something, I have a business that helps people focus on that. How do you figure out how to finance this differently than working exclusively with banks? And that has been such a powerful thing. But that book is very helpful. Ed can give you my contact information if you're interested in hearing about the rest. But that has been an unlock in our lives and my wife and I life that I really didn't expect. It helps our telecommunications business. It helps everything that we're involved in. And as we're going to go buy equipment, we're using the same process to do that.
Awesome.
So it's about the embetterment and finding a new a strategy that's more financially effective to recuperate some of that. We try to make sure everybody else that we work with is served as though they were our family. I want to make sure that they have the kind of product that I would want them to sell me if I was their client.
That's such a testimonial. Okay, we don't want to give out your personal phone number, but we do want people to know how to get here so that they can literally stay a week, a night, a month at this location. So how can they get a hold of somebody here and make a reservation?
Okay. Well, you can Google Rolling Stone Stables and RV Park, Shawnee, Oklahoma. So we're just east of Oklahoma City, a bit west of Tulsa on Interstate 40. A lot of rodeo shows come through here, and so anybody who's coming through, we'd love to meet you. Alfred will be on site. We've got other team members who also live here. That's how you'd find us.
So the best way is Google. Is there a telephone number?
We do. We're changing all that.
Oh, so we're changing all that.
By the time that you go to air.
But if you'll look it up, you're not changing the name.
Not for now.
Okay, not for now anyway. Look it up on Google and find this location in Shawnee, Oklahoma, and come out and you'll say, I saw that pond/lake.
Ellis Lake.
Look up Ellis Lake and come fishing. I can guarantee you this lake has been jumping, moving. There's turtles. There's
a lot of life here.
A lot of wildlife living in this
right.
pond here. So come bring a fishing pole. Okay. What other amenities are around here close?
Amenities. I mean, we've got the town of Shawnee's got a pretty large university. Oklahoma Baptist University is there. It's a town that's got all, I mean, they've got a Macy's and everything else that you'd expect at a metropolitan mall. All the good grocery stores and everything that's pretty close. We're not totally in the boondocks, though. It does feel like while you're out here.
How far are you from Shawnee?
6 miles.
6 miles.
No big deal.
No big deal.
No.
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. And so eventually, how many sites are we planning in this half?
In this half, well, as you know, we're having to test the market. And so here's a plug I would make to some of your audiences trying to figure out if they get into this business. If you've ever been interested in multifamily, the limitations of multifamily are you have it, you've got to improve it, and hopefully you can improve your rent offering to people as you improve your amenities. Here, it's totally different. If you have the land and you have an expert who can help you do the design and figure out all the components needed, you can test the market and expand incrementally as you have demand.
In phases.
So to use high-level numbers, we're talking about going to 250 sites.
On this half,
seeing what the market demand is. Do we truly fill it out? Does our marketing serve? I mean, you've done a lot. Well, you've done a ton for us on seeing who it is that we're competing with, what the region's other sites look like, and it turns out that we're the lowest cost provider.
Right now.
And so how do we move from being a low cost provider to be a much more value focused thing? A lot of these businesses, it seems to me, are all focused on price competition. And I don't want to compete on price in almost anything.
I understand you want to be the best and provide the best value in return for their investment.
Right.
But America has been suffering from a low-income housing shortage.
Yep.
That's bipartisan. Nobody's going to argue with that. Nobody is going to say we don't have a problem there. Yeah.
Affordable housing is a huge issue.
Affordable housing is a huge issue, and the RV industry is not the only, but it's one very valid solution to that issue, to that problem. And then at the same time, I feel like our next big problem is identifying workers who will represent our company the way we want to be represented at a price that we're willing or able to pay. I think that's the next big major national crisis. So we have to develop these properties in a way that we're less dependent upon workers.
Right. Yeah, I try to think about every business as though, what would this be like in a significant recession? If 2008 hits again, what's going to happen here? And America is also going through this where you have all this created currency that's going in and diluting the punch bowl and diluting everybody's purchasing power. Well, that means you're going to create an hourglass where you've got a shrinking middle class and you've got an increasing asset class and you've got a group that need low-income housing.
And they still need a place to live.
They do. And so I want to make sure that we do that and we create a place that's dignified. So we're going to serve that market here. I think of this as a recession-resistant business, or it's counter-cyclical.
Wow.
You know better than me.
Well, I appreciate your intelligence. I hope you've enjoyed this segment as much as I have. Kent is a wealth of knowledge, a good Christian man, and we certainly appreciate him.